Concession number 177747, Rule 32.
You were saying you were baffled about something called BMA currency.
Yes, well, I think we broke off when I'd been to the education office in Toronto for some ABCA pamphlets. And
yes.
Then we had a... I looked at the harbour and was reminded of the swordfish attack on the Italian fleet in Taranto Harbour. The next day, Tuesday 28 March, get my troop ready for embarkation. Afternoon into Taranto and change £600 worth of people's cash into BMA currency.
That might have been for
Egypt. I think getting it ready for the Middle East as opposed to Italy.
Yeah.
The cash we were changing, £600 worth, was probably Amgot Italian lire. 600 times 400 lire, yes.
So that would, yes, that would be going into the British military money for the Middle East.
That's right,
yes.
Exactly, yes, that's what it would be. I'd forgotten this need to change it. We didn't have a single currency then, and one realises the point. 3 hours wait I had at the cash place, returned to get some gin and whiskey in the Naffy for 6 shillings and 6 pence a bottle, bed early. 6 a.m. 29 March, march to Tosi Pier, T-O-S-I Pier in Taranto. Usual chaos, then we go on a lighter to embark on the Cameronian, a White Star one funnel liner. We have breakfast aboard and look back at Taranto. And then any idea of having a peaceful time is destroyed because we have to have troop parades, conferences, orderly officer duties on the ship just as we had ashore. And I was in a crowded cabin with, I think there were 6 of us, quartermaster, signals officer, MO, padre, adjutant and myself.
What kind of ship was it?
I should think it would be a 15 to 20,000 ton liner, cruise liner.
Not a proper troop ship?
Oh, no. Well, I don't know what a proper troop ship was. I mean, they were presumably all converted liners anyway.
Well, there were some troop ships that had been specifically built for trooping.
Ah, this was not this. No, this was a White Star line, pre-war one-funnel White Star, which, of course, was the line that served mainly South Africa before the war. Blah, 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 now where were we? Yes, very steady ship, there was not much movement, but the men's quarters, I've noted, were terrible. One always had this, if you had a hint, as I had a hint of socialism about me, you always felt guilty about the gulf between the ranks. At our very first meeting, you said, why did you want to be an officer? And I said, because it was more comfortable, or liked it to be. You thought this was a cynical answer. So it was, but there's a lot in it. I mean, I would not have wanted to be in the men's quarters below decks.
But you pay a price through your conscience.
With your conscience, yes. Whether, yes, that's right. It's an even balance, isn't it? You can't win. Thursday, 30th March, at sea, troop parades, 9 and 2, try to entertain the men with bees, that would be spelling bees and that sort of thing, and quizzes. We all write home telling people about our new MEF, Middle East Forces address. We see Italy and Sicily now in the distance and go due south to avoid the Hellenic Islands, which are still in German hands. I had forgotten that. I thought the Germans had been driven out by now, but obviously not. And we had our fill of Naffy, gin and lemon, read Fothergill's Innkeeper's Diary, My Three Inns, I think it was called, wasn't it? And my bedside book, and we, just as tourists in peacetime, we put our clocks on 1 hour. Friday 31st, picked for blackout duty and lifeboat officer. Hold a quiz on the Italian campaign. Receive real English coins as change in the lounge. First we'd seen for, goodness knows, 9 months.
Was all the money that you've been using, the Amgot money and the BMA money, all paper?
It was all paper, yes. It went down right down to about 50 lira or below, even less, perhaps even 10. I've got some in this folder, I'll show you. Then we put the clocks on another hour, now on to Cairo time, 2 hours ahead of London. Too many people in the cabin and tempers are frayed, but the naffy does have fruit, which we haven't tasted on time. Sunday, 1st April, 1944. Large fish alongside the ship gives us a shock. We have submarines in mind.
Were you sailing as part of a convoy, or were you on your own as a single ship?
I think we were on our own this time. I don't remember it being part of a convoy, but I could be wrong.
Do you remember seeing any air activity on this voyage?
I'm just looking, glancing very quickly. No. No, no. It was safer than we thought, in fact. Safer than we had anticipated. The Mediterranean was pretty clear of Germans by this time, apart from these Hellenic islands. What I remember mostly about this was a strongly emotional thing, and that is that a sergeant, a gun sergeant of ours, developed appendicitis and it became acute. And our doctor, who was one of the six in our cabin I was in, acted as anaesthetist to two other medical officers from other regiments who were aboard, and they operated on Sergeant Betts, and he didn't come round from the anaesthetic. And the doctor, our MO, comes back into the cabin at about 1 a.m. and is in a dreadful state, weeping out loud because the patient died. And we all pretend to be asleep.
Did they discover what had gone wrong?
Well, it was, I guess the equipment may have been more primitive than would have been desirable. And he was probably given too much anaesthetic, I should think. And it was our doc who was in charge of the anaesthetic.
Was your doc an anaesthetist by training, or just a...
I think he was probably a GP or a generalist who had been called up. Had he been a specialist anaesthetist, he might not have been much good in dealing with battle wounds in the general sense, which was his most regular job, bandaging people up rather than pulling them out. But anyway, I remember this so clearly because it showed the, I suppose whether it's British character or character in general, I don't know, but everybody pretended to be asleep when this man was so desperate, except for his closest friend, who was Ian Topill, the adjutant, who did try to comfort him. But I remember the following morning on deck saying to one of my fellow subalterns, "Wasn't it awful last night?" And he said, "What?" And that was the stiff upper lip in action, denying knowledge of anything having happened at all, when it was quite clear that you could not help but be aware of it. It was a fraught emotional thing.
Did the doctor recover from it?
Oh, yes, he did. He did, thank God. I mean, he had the sense to let himself go and then recovered. Had he tried to bottle it up, he might not have done.
And presumably he must have lost patients before, particularly dealing with battle wounds.
He must have felt that he had done the wrong thing, and he probably had. It wasn't the wound that killed this chap. He was just a...
It was the anaesthetic itself.
It was the anaesthetic, yes.
Was there any sort of inquiry or row about that matter?
No, what there was the immediate, the next day, you see, I mean, within hours of this occurring, 12 hours, we had the sea burial. I remember that very well.
How was that done?
Well, they had the plank and the coffin and the flag, and the body was slid overboard into the sea. I don't doubt there must have been endless bureaucratic documentation to do with this. It would take a lot of explaining, to put it mildly. But somebody must have had to write reports on it, whether this would be the ship's captain. I guess it would, rather than the military.
He would be in overall charge, wouldn't he? I would guess,
once we were on board. Thank goodness I was not involved in that, but it was wholly unexpected. I mean, this was a man, a sergeant, who had been perfectly well 48 hours before, and he's now at the bottom of the sea.
Did you have occasion to consult the doctor at all?
Only once, in the Salerno bridgehead, when I had my one and only war wound. I went for a shower to the mobile shower baths, and coming under a fence on the way back, I caught my eye on a piece of barbed wire, and I went to him, and he wanted to put some stitches in it, and I was rather afraid of stitches, and I said, oh, leave it, and he left it, and it got better, leaving a slight mark. No, I knew the doctor quite well, but not as a patient of his, but as a colleague. He was a nice chap. We even vied with each other for a girlfriend at a later point. But when I say he was a GP, I think he may have still been a hospital registrar when he joined up, because he was quite young. Anyhow, it was a convoy. You asked whether we were in convoy.
Yes.
We were in convoy, because as we gradually approach Egypt, we go to port side, and half the convoy peeled off starboard to Alexandria. And we had the sea burial for Sergeant Betts before we went into port side. Then we berthed into the actual entrance, so it seemed, of the Suez Canal, which starts just at the just to the north of Port Suez Canal, the first port you meet on your left, so to speak, coming from Australia, would be Port Said. And the aspect was that of very, very flat land. It's presumably the Nile Delta, or the land between the Nile and the Suez Canal. And it seems strange to us, totally unfamiliar, to see the touches of British colonialism. At first we'd seen, because Algeria, Tunisia were French colonies. Here we didn't have a colony, but a protectorate, or whatever the technical situation was. But the first thing we saw, having left Italy, coming into land, was a huge poster for Johnny Walker whiskey. Large advert hoardings on the quayside. And I'd totally forgotten this, there are Yugoslav refugees in a boat alongside us. They must have been getting away from the Germans, this time being a very active one in the hills with Tito, etc. And I stand alone on the deck watching the floodlit loading of salt, etc. One or two submarines, fortunately ours, in the docks alongside. Monday, 3rd April, wait for the field cashier, presumably to, I don't know, change even more money. Oh, yes, I see. No, this was a second change within a week. I had to wait for the field cashier to change £633 now into piastres, Egyptian currency.
So for
British military money was not valid
Egyptian
in Egypt.
Piastres.
We had to use Egyptian money in Egypt. Mm. So we had already lost further more money by not having a single currency. Mm. I wrote to my brother, my sister, and to an old college friend. It's cool in Port Said Harbour. Nobody is allowed off the ship. Eventually pack and distribute the cash to the owners of it and give out orders before having sleep from 10:30 till 2:45, not very long. Thursday the 4th, up at 3 a.m., shave, cup of cocoa, then have to wait on quayside till 0700. Onto a train along the side of the Suez Canal.
So you're straight off the ship?
Onto a train, in effect.
Onto a train,
yes.
What sort of train was that? Was it another cattle truck train, or was it...
It would be, yes, it would be. Except for the officers who had coaches. see North African Arabs again, the first since Tunisia, which was some 7 months before. Ismailia looks lovely. By degrees, from Ismailia, well, we went by train from Port Said to Ismailia, which is near the Suez Canal, about halfway along it. And then onto trucks and drive to a colossal camp called Kassassin Camp, Q-U-A-S-S-A-S-S-I-N, Kassassin Camp. I settled into a large tent with the padre, who was an Anglican, Church of England padre. Then to a glorious officer's club in the desert, with bananas and oranges, first we'd seen for yonks.
Was this camp at Kassassin all tented, or were there...
It was tented, it was a tented camp. There may have been one or two sort of hutted, mud hut, mud brick buildings to give some security for shops and their goods, like the officers, the Nafi officer's shop and that sort of thing. There's some quite valuable stuff around, and you would not want to risk much of it in tents, particularly in Egypt. And this was a remarkable, refreshing change, because on the 5th of April, shirt sleeves, weather just like an English summer, troop parades but little work, and then to an officer's shop in the desert, whereby pyjamas, new pips, bush shirt, etc. And I remember we were served by the most gorgeous-looking Greek women who were employed by the Nafi. The young Greek girls were really something. There were a lot of Greeks in Egypt, and some of them had jobs with the with the Nafi. The pleasure of having tomato and ham sandwiches for tea. Sudanese waiters are a wonderful sight, with the traditional cuts down their cheeks. Work in the office, regimental office in the evening, on mess bills, cinema, allocations of seats, etc. Told the next day, busy with conferences, told at 6 p.m. to have a regimental work mess ready for tomorrow. Fly around dealing with this and write to various friends. Friday the 7th, hear about our future. We were to be ready after this rest period for reinforcement, refurbishment and retraining, in order to be in action again by the 1st of July, the assumption being that this meant in action in Italy.
Was that made explicit?
This was... there was no other action going on, so it had to be Italy. And there was nothing happening at that time in the Middle East. I don't think there was any idea of invading Greece at this time.
Were you told what you were going to do in the meantime during the period of rest and retraining? Did they give you a detailed programme of...
I don't think they did, but it was made pretty clear that it would be thorough. I mean, we would have to be regarded as rookies again and get out of these bad habits of being in action. We'd have to do the real job of soldiering, i.e. the barracks square.
What were the bad habits?
Oh, the bad habits were not being on morning drills whilst in action. All the good habits of peacetime soldiering had to be thrown overboard whilst we... were sidetracked into fighting against the Germans, you see, and now the good things were, the proper soldiering was to come back. I do remember this. We had quite an unpleasant adventure in the afternoon. I went out with a couple of catering chaps and a driver to buy some bananas and eggs, and we fetched up in a sort of Egyptian hamlet out in the bush somewhere, and an over-insistent Egyptian banana seller refused to be turned away and kept standing on the running board of this scout car, and getting in front of the wheels, insistent on selling his bananas. And, oh dear, my driver eventually lost his patience, got out of his cab and threw the basket of bananas into a hedge. And there was an ugly confrontation followed. And we were attacked by the village. We had pickaxe handles ready in case we were stormed. Fortunately, this was an armoured scout car. But eventually, the only way we could get out was by the driver, who was a very rough and ready chap, hosing them with the fire extinguisher from inside the cab, which was not particularly pleasant because I think some of this stuff probably got into their eyes and may have been very damaging chemical. Oh, nasty. However, we get the stuff back in time to start a mess for the evening meal. And I hear that I'm going to go on leave to Cairo next Monday. This was Friday. On Saturday, you realise the difference between a temporary, a country you're in temporarily on an invasion, etc., like Italy, and one where the British Army has been for some time, like Egypt. We went to, on Saturday, the 8th of April, to an amazing Naffy bulk issue store with an unparalleled array, like Tesco, of food, drinks, etc. Back at the base, the troop occupies my time with leave rosters, letter censoring, etc. I'm still doing two men's work and half-heartedly have a go in the evening at the war diary. Sunday 9th, early pay parade. Rush off to headquarters Royal Artillery to have photo taken for identity card. I'd forgotten this. We had to have identity cards for going into Cairo, etc., for travelling in Egypt, indeed.
What had you had in Italy? Had you had any sort of...
Well, we had our... we did have an identity card, but it wasn't a photograph one. I mean, we had our army ID card. I've probably still got it, actually, somewhere in here. But this was... I think this was in order to cover us for going into Cairo on leave. Wade into the neglected war diary for February from information already available, like situation reports, you were asking, yes, the source, and firing records. A big job, stop only for meals and to collect a temporary identity card from divisional headquarters. Eventually finish February diary and can go on leave with a better conscience. The mess is working well, with beer disappearing at an alarming rate. A letter from home. They know now that I'm out of Anzio. Monday, 10 April. Off at 7 o'clock in the morning with Hodge and Walkham. Lovely drive through Green Delta. Check into the National Hotel in Cairo, 10 o'clock. Afternoon in Bazaar. Spend heaps of money on gifts. See film White Cargo at the Metro, a marvellous open-air cinema. The first and one of the very few open-air cinemas I've ever been into, where you sat and drank at the tables and watched this enormous screen under the trees.
Who were Hodge and Walkham?
Both lieutenants from the regiment. Peter Hodge, and I can't remember Walkham's first name.
And you went off as a party?
We went, three of us, on leave, presumably, though I'm not sure, sharing a room. And three was probably a sizeable room. We went to the cinema, having had dinner at the very posh place, Maxim's Roof Garden, which is one of the places in Cairo, and may still be. Films finish 20 to 12 midnight, back to sandwiches and coffee at the National. Tuesday the 11th, surprised in the dining room to see a group of Russian officers come marching in. First Russians I'd ever seen. They were there on some liaison job. This is April 44. Yes, they would be needing to liaise. Apart from the fact that there were conferences coming up. I can't remember which was the relevant one at that time. Churchill and...
Casablanca was in 43.
Casablanca 43. Now, 45 was the one in the Crimea.
Yalta,
yes, that's right. Anyway, there they were, and I remember they were so smart, and they all marched in fully kitted and were obviously very disciplined. To them, it must have been a more surprising environment even than to us.
Did you have any contact with
them? No, none at all. I don't think it would have been welcome. They were very self-contained. Wear a khaki drill light uniform bought at the officer's shop, where the serving people are an astonishingly beautiful array of Greek girls. And so, off to the pyramids at Giza as a tourist, ride on a camel, have fortune told. They said I'd be home in 8 months, with acute danger during the next 3 weeks. I think the phasing was a bit wrong.
Were you home in 8 months?
No, nor was any acute danger in the next three weeks.
What method did your fortune teller use?
No idea. I think it was hands.
Palmistry,
I think, yes. Yes, Then to the Gezira Club, which was quite something. The Gezira Island in the middle of the Nile in Cairo is a very, very posh colonials club for the most part. I mean, the island isn't all club, but a very desirable part of it is, with tennis courts and a bit of this sport and that sport and the other, bars and dining rooms. All officers in Egypt were given temporary membership of the Gezira. High-class place, I've put on, island in the Nile. Dancing there, hopeless, I don't know why. So return with Peter and meet some other subalterns in a low cabaret called Dolls, about which I've got no recollection at all. Unless it was it wasn't Madame Bardia, that came later. Wednesday the 12th, to Groppi's, the opulent ice cream parlour of Cairo, full of socialites, where Viennese coffee is served and the ice creams are very special. The army seems miles away, but Cairo is nonetheless full of black cats, in other words, our divisional emblem. So other units must have been there in their hundreds. Go to the Gezira Sporting Club again, a great social centre, then to an amusing film, Bob Hope's Road to Morocco. 13 April, usual morning visit, as it seemed usual by now, to the splendid Groppies, then invited to a WAF party. Miss this, and we go with a Maltese driver, an amusing chap, to the notorious Madame Bardia Cabaret. Well, what came off there is really more appropriate.
Oh.
But in fact, it was a very poor relation of what's the cinema? The theatre in We Never Stopped.
Oh, the Windmill.
The Windmill.
We Never Close.
We Never Close, that's right. Well, that's it was a bit like that. I said it's pretty low, but we escaped lightly on the financial side and returned to the hotel after enjoyable highballs. Friday the 14th, still there. Finish off shopping with Jerry Barron. Now, Jerry Barron was the chap who had already got two military crosses, I think, in North Africa and Salerno.
What sort of things could you find to buy as gifts and souvenirs in
Tended to be things made of cloth, you know, tablecloths, lace, embroidered things. Undoubtedly, had we had the courage to buy them, not knowing the right sizes, there would have been a plethora of women's clothes, dresses, and all that sort of thing. But I don't think any of us felt sufficiently confident to buy those things. We bought things for ourselves. I mean, there was a great fashion immediately we landed there for desert boots. Desert boots being the sort of suede shoes with high ankle, which were all the rage. Very light to walk in, not like heavy leather shoes, still less like boots. I have some to this day, desert boots. What else did we buy? Well, we were able to buy books, you see. There were English bookshops in Cairo. You could buy films, you could get anything. It was a ration-free zone.
What did you make of the Egyptians?
Ha! Well, we were torn between dislike and pity, I think. We felt terrible pity for the poor Egyptians, and we saw quite a lot of Egyptians suffering from eye problems.